Hold a seat at the bar to join us for another episode of McAnally's Pubcast, a podcast exploring the fun and fantastical mind of Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files series. Hosts Tanzin Jess and Maggie bring you another round of literary analysis on this immense, immersive, and colorful environment inhabited by Harry Dresden, the world's only licensed private investigator and professional wizard. Join an active and engaged community of new and diehard dedicated fans focused on the fabulous themes, theories, characters, context, lore, and more. This is McAnally's Dresden Files Pubcast by Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.
Welcome to the McAnally's Pubcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 17.1, Conflicted Convictions, where we are covering the novel Proven Guilty. My name is Tanzin, and I'm joined by Maggie.
Hello, hello.
And Jess.
256 days.
There's no love lost between Harry Dresden, the only wizard in the Chicago phone book, and the White Council of Wizards, who find him brash and undisciplined. But war with the vampires has thinned their ranks, so the council has drafted Harry as a warden and assigned him to look into rumors of black magic in the Windy City. As Harry adjusts to his new role, another problem arrives in the form of the tattooed and pierced daughter of an old friend, all grown up and already in trouble. Her boyfriend is the only suspect in what looks like a supernatural assault straight out of a horror film. Malevolent entities that feed on fear are loose in Chicago, but it's all in a day's work for a wizard, his faithful dog, and a talking skull named Bob.
Chapter 1. Harry and the Merlin argue about the enforcement of the laws of magic after the execution of a convicted teenager.
So right off the bat, this is why I think that Harry wasn't wearing his warden's cloak in Warcry, because he would have known about the blood then.
Right.
So Jim Butcher knew this is how his book started, so he's like, all right, I can't have Harry wearing the cloak before now and then throw him into a bloody situation. So he's got to still be resisting the cloak.
I see. Gotcha, gotcha.
It's a darker start, too.
The
thing about watching Harry Potter is that just the intro to Harry Potter, it goes from these bright magical colors, and as you go movie to movie to movie, it starts off with just darker and darker imagery, and that the Dresden Files is absolutely following in that. Like, you start picking up these books later and later and later in the series, and he's like, everything sucks and is awful and is horrible, and we're in the midst of war, and
death
everyone's
and
dying,
and destruction,
and it's like, wow, remember when this was about magic?
What happened to those quipped one-liners that started the book that made you laugh right off the bat? Right.
Which
isn't it?
Brings me to this word, imprecations?
Yes.
Fantastic word. He should have been using it 1,000 times before now. It fits so well in this series, and for it to have only come up now is crazy.
Interesting. Jessica's found a new favorite word.
It's great. I'd forgotten about it before I did the reread this most recent time, and I thought, did Jim Butcher also just learn about this word by the time he got to this book? Because it should have been here since Stormfront.
I remember reading like some. There's a few in this first chapter that I was like, oh.
Somebody bought a thesaurus.
That's so nice, like, wordsmithing.
Like, up in his game now.
Yeah. But yes, we come into
He's a college graduate now, so he knows.
We come into Proven Guilty at the top of an execution, which is throwback to when Harry was a 16-year-old kid. And magic charges.
Not even just some other, but another 16-year-old teenager. Only slightly different outcome to Harry's. Nobody was there to speak up for this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, very, very descriptive. Very, like, it really
it
just
is bloody
sucks.
And gory, and you get this reminder that Morgan didn't just have beef with Harry. Morgan wasn't just the Midwest to East. I'm not exactly sure what Morgan's range covered when he was covering Harry's section now that it's Harry's. But anyways, point is, he's executioner of
North
the wardens.
America or whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that is exactly, that has always been his role. It's not just, but yeah, we've seen him attempt to be in action a couple of times, but never.
We know Harry's complained about him.
But yeah, this is, and I mean, it really does give you a second to think about, you know, what it would be to have this role, right? Like, especially as you're living in this moment with it. right? To be like, how many times has Morgan done this? You know, we established in Deadbeat that he was, what, like 150-ish or something like that, I think. He was having his conversation with Lucio and stuff like that, that I think Morgan's somewhere around that. So, you know, presumably he's held this position for a while now. I mean, even like a year of this being your job, but like 50 years or...
Well, that's the thing. It's been more or less 14 years since Harry was on the chopping block. And Morgan's continued to do this since then, and then who knows how long before that.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it would just happen like once a year or something like that, but again, given the population, you're going to have to assume that this probably happens more than that, you know?
A couple times a year at least.
Right? Like, yeah, so I'm like, you really gotta, like, takes a tough person to either that or completely sick and twisted. And I mean, Morgan has his issues.
I'll say, at the beginning of the series, we might have been led to believe that he's sick and twisted, but by now we've learned that Morgan is also just a guy, okay?
Yeah.
We're a little bit endeared to him in Deadbeat, and...
I love this first chapter, that it's got so many layers and nuances to, like, all of the different players going on. Like, that's a lot of... There's, like, just a ton of moving parts already.
Well, yeah, and like you say, the serious side, not all flippant.
And you even get it coming out of Deadbeat, too. And a little bit in War Cry is that Harry wasn't meant to be a warden. Nobody trusts him. Nobody wanted him to be.
And he certainly didn't want to be.
The senior council came out of these, like, comas, battle frenzies, concussions, whatever. They were not around to be the senior council near the end of that last book and then whatever short stories were happening in the middle. And now they come out and they're like, I'm sorry, you deputized who? You gave it to who? You made who a warden? And obviously Lucio is backing him up and she's like, this is my decision. You can't take it back. This is what I want. But it is very much for the senior council to be like, that was like the one thing, man. We didn't know we had to make an actual rule about it. But come on.
Yeah, right.
And now it's this new post-world where they all have to get together or they have to work together a little bit more than before.
A lot more than before for Harry,
In some cases, but no one's happy about it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reinforcement of that gray area where Harry sort of always sort of sits, like that, border of good and bad, like, because he's done things that...
Questionable, yes.
That brought down the wrath of the wardens, but then...
Well, this is hard for the audience, too, because in this moment, this first chapter, too, you get a little bit of this, like, yeah, Harry, you're being a little bit of a bitch right now.
Like, yeah, well, it is, because like I say, he stands there and watches it happen. He doesn't interfere. He doesn't stop it. He doesn't, you know, basically turns around and pukes.
It's one hell of a trauma response.
And then bitches about it. Yeah.
And then, yeah, and they're like, you all right? And then, I mean, yeah. Well, and you get it right there from the Merlin. He's like, well, if you had some evidence that you felt would have proved his innocence, you could have brought it. And he's like, you know, I didn't fucking have, right? So again, right, it's Harry's, like, even more so bound by, right? He said right in book one, okay, we're bound by a certain amount of rules and laws. And yeah, you know, you could bend him a little bit and play a little fast and loose, but you got to be careful, right? Where it's here, now he is inextricably bound, right? And you know, through this whole scene, you get a little bit that this is a touch of his punishment, penance, whatever as well, right? Like,
and we also see just how lucky Harry is that he's alive at all.
Well, yeah, it really drives home the point of how close he came. And if Ebenezer hadn't there and...
We got this a few books ago that Ebenezer did have to fight to prove, and that Ebenezer was supposed to execute Harry the second he went rogue.
Yeah.
The second he showed any sort of pushback, he was supposed to. And so I think, yeah, for Harry to really witness it and be like, wow, the fact that I got off at all is crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, like he says, right, he's like, he never even knew when the blade fell, right? So, I mean, it's like just boom, right?
It's,
I mean...
Harry is one of the only who did get off.
One of the very few.
Very, very few. We don't know any others. Exactly.
Yeah.
If there are any others, it's been a fucking hell of a long time because no one's comparing him to anyone.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't do this shit for...
Yeah, and the Ramirez's and the other apprentices coming up, right? They know who, but you're right. There's no one else in the history books.
Harry brings up Ramirez, too, for a moment in this chapter, and it's like, oh, yeah, he's a good kid. And, oh, yeah, that says a lot about him if you like him, Dresden. And, again, compared to the amount of wizards of the council that are making it through their youth enough to find that they have power and not going rogue is clearly enough because the ranks are still being filled out. They are still accepting apprentices. They are still training and onboarding and whatever.
Hey, you know what? If you hadn't got yourself eaten by a werewolf, you might have even had enough now to qualify Kim.
Kim Delaney. Who knows?
They might have even taken you in now and be like, okay, you know what? Good enough. You can only do one spell. We'll work with it.
But.
Yeah.
But yes, for the fact that there are still enough to be slipping through the cracks is the problem here, that they clearly all have an issue with it, but for Harry, it's brand new and fresh.
Yeah, and we don't know, right? I mean, the kid is screaming in Korean, but we don't know if he's, you know, because again, with the ways and the hows and the whos, right, they could, you know, they can hold their trials anywhere, you know, kind of a thing, right? So you're like, again, is this another American kid under, like, Harry's jurisdiction that they found, or is he from somewhere else and they're just, this is where we chose to do it because we want to rub Dresden's nose in it and make a point and remind him? Who knows, right? But it's...
Well, and that's another thing, too, is that he was killing his own family members.
It was pretty...
He was and forcing them into suicide, hiding their bodies, evading the authorities. He clearly had gone evil.
And I think this is the other side of it, partly to get us... I think, because, yeah, it's very disturbing. You're like, start off with, like, yeah, we just beheaded a 16-year-old. We're all like, what? What the fuck? Harry didn't deserve it. And then they make a very good point of, or make a point of trying very hard, I think, to say, okay, but this guy was fine. You know, you go, oh, okay, it's fine. We killed him. Like, this guy was a bad dude.
Yeah, well, and Harry talks, basically, in his own head, he talks himself out of his argument unintentionally.
Yes.
Like, he's like, oh, he's just a kid, but, like, I've never tried to... murder anyone for the sake of murdering anybody. Like, yes, I have killed people, but, like, yeah, this kid did it.
But again, the bad guys that were actively, like, yes.
In another chapter or two, he's trying to explain it to Murphy, and she's getting mad like Dresden, and now he's suddenly on the side of the warden. She's like, well, you don't understand. We don't have a choice. So it's like, he is very conflicted about where this falls, and I get it, because in the wizarding world, they have executions. They have capital punishment, right? And that is the only way that they deal with it, okay? There is no jail for wizards, okay?
Yes.
You break the law, you
There's
have to
no
die.
There's no Azkaban in Harry's, in Dresden's world, yeah.
And the warden sort of is like, well, once you've done black magic, it starts twisting your mind, and that's why we have to just put an end to you, because there is no rehabilitation program, and Harry's obviously like, well, it's not fair that there's no rehabilitation program, and blah, 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 this and that. But again, as you said, the book tries very hard to be like, no, this guy deserved it, actually. And that's hard, because he is still a 16-year-old kid.
He's
and
still 16, and exactly.
No, he had any caught up and twisted. And as even Merlin says in this, is that that kid already died when he started using black magic. The black magic already ate his soul and twisted his thoughts, and so...
Well, I mean, yeah, like the Merlin says, you know, the interviewed or talked to or whatever, like, 24 people that he fucked around with, like, mind magic. And he's like... maybe 3 of them will recover their set. So, like, 24.
Mm-hmm.
So, out of, like, 24-some people, it's like, maybe 3 have a chance of recovering. So, the others are all, and that's the ones he talked to, so that's not even counting the 4 that
Who
committed
knows, whatever,
suicide
yeah.
and the other 9, but, and yeah, like, I mean...
Yeah, it wasn't even an accidental use of magic that went sideways. It was he convinced them to kill themselves.
I was going
to
say, so. It wasn't, like, yeah. just
that
one...
That is actual murder through magic. So.
Right, like you say, in Harry's case, be like, oh, self-defense, I didn't know what was happening, I just, you know, but I'm like, yeah, 1 maybe, 17? No, that's a lot harder to be like, oops, sorry, my bad. So, yeah, at least Butcher kind of gives us that as that we don't have to be as culpable in it. That way we can kind of, you know, see Dresden as being as culpable in it, because you're like, okay, well, he was really a pretty
Well, yeah, but then you start doubting
point,
Dresden because he's still fighting for this kid. He's like, he was just a kid. He had no one to teach him the rules. There was no chance for him.
That part, yeah, the beforehand is.
Yeah, but it, you know, it makes you be a little bit like, okay, grow up, Dresden. Either this kid really needed to be put down or he didn't, but pick a side and... I don't know. And I obviously, it's not an
he's
easy...
He's just human.
It's yeah, obviously not an easy stance to take.
I think it's a really interesting way to, like, paint this picture of where Dresden is at, where he's come from, what's unresolved for him.
Yeah.
He's got all... And, like, it even shows, like, he's got guilt over doing that split-second instant to gamble on shooting the corpse taker that may or may not have actually been Lucho at the time.
Yes, right. Well, and even that, because that's the thing, is when Dresden's out in the field, and I mean, granted, thankfully, he has not yet had to come up against a 16-year-old kid. But like you say, right, when it's a ghoul attacking somebody, when it's a vamp attacking somebody, when it's Cowl attacking somebody, when it's Gravain, or like, no problem. Harry's like, boom, I will, right? You don't get a trial. I will kill you right here and now because I can see you're doing enough bad stuff. You've made your choices, right? So it is very, very much that you know, Harry trying to come to terms with all the living this. I've been there. I've been on the other side. I've been the kid. I've been the warden. I've been the thing. He did bad stuff, but he's only a kid. But I kill people all the time that do bad stuff. Doesn't matter how old he was. And, yeah, it's very...
Very muddy.
Well, the worst thing you can do in the supernatural world is not have a nationality, supernatural power claim you. Because every time you, like the cowl, for example, doesn't, he's not part of the wardens, he's not part of the Red Court
that
or anything like that. Cares if
that
he kills
him. He's
like, whatever. No one cares if you die. And there's a couple of other instances, too, of people we meet. It's like, you don't have a big enough...
You're not Bianca, okay?
We're not going. Like, the courts don't care about you. The wardens don't care about you. So if Harry kills you, that's on you, man. It sucks to be you.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Yeah, you have no allies, no backup, no community.
Yeah. No community, yeah. But this is another part of the problem, too, is that the Merlin is trying to say, once you use black magic once, you've basically opened yourself up to the chances of corruption.
Yeah, the infection is in there, the virus is in there, it's just gonna grow,
Which goes to show why everyone's so wary of Harry, because there's no denying that he used black magic when he was 16 years old to kill Justin with magic.
That is fact.
A fact. It's a fact that we all know, or that the council all knows, and why they wanted to execute him. But Harry also did stop. He did that one single act to save his life. Admittedly, they caught him before he could do much more. Maybe if they'd let him go running around the countryside, maybe he would have had time to morph into this sort of...
Yeah, Harry could have been this.
But he also still, like, come so close to using loopholes to not quite break these rules already.
But that's in adulthood, and he's covering that up. They don't know about those loopholes as much. The T-Rex thing they know about, but a lot of his skirting the edges is not reported to the council at all. They don't realize how often he skirts those rules. Outside of the T-Rex.
Especially once, they made Merlin stop following him around everywhere. Merlin, no, him too. Yes, once Morgan stopped dogging his every footstep after the first book, then he's like, okay, I can cheat a little bit more because they're not constantly, but...
But the point being is that it gives you this sort of pause, because this whole time we've gone this whole, Harry was innocent, he was just protecting his life, it was self-defense, you should be allowed to do it. And the Merlin saying, like, self-defense or not, once you use black magic, you are fucking crazy and we have to put an end to you. And this is the first instance we've seen of someone who apparently really did just slip into that crazy easily.
Yeah, and like you say, we don't get the backstory on what started him on that or whatever. Was he just a disturbed psychopath to begin with, or was... You know, her parents were beating him, or his uncle, you know what I mean? And there was a whole, like,
yeah,
maybe
Harry
there
gives
was
a scenario again in a few
it.
Chapters where it's like, you just start using mind magic to, like, make the girl, like, go on a date with you, and then you start pushing it further and further and further, and then you're having her do things she didn't, would never have agreed to,
Yeah, sort of, and again, especially like you say, if you're not aware that you've got the power to do that kind of a thing, if it's, you know, you just suddenly start realizing more and more that whatever you want comes true, right? Then it's that you may have, like you say, done a lot of it inadvertently and got yourself that much more entrenched in it before you...
You're lucky all you've done so far is disappear glass at the zoo.
Right? But it is. It's really interesting in that sense because, right, on the one hand, you can be like, oh, it's all just fantasy, right? Like, whatever. Sure, go all right. We can kill a million people. Harry, it's fine. They're all bad guys. They deserve to die. But this is bringing it into, I mean, more of a real-life sort of situation. Obviously, he's still very engrossed in the magical world. But you know what I mean? But you start seeing the, right, like kids that do crimes and are tried as adults, you know, like, how do you make that decision, right? How serious was it? Where were they coming from? Were they just a dumb kid that made a dumb mistake? Or is it like, no, you were old enough to know what you were doing, and this is serious enough that we can't, you know, you can't use the excuse of, oh, he's just a kid, and, right? Like,
and every Facebook comment will show you everyone disagrees on whatever side that gets landed on.
Right? Exactly, you know? So, yeah, like you say, it is a very conflicted thing, and I think most of us would be kind of in Harry's position one way or the other, both trying to rage against it and his unhappiness and displeasure with the council, you know, and his own side, and again trying to be like, okay, well, it was already too late for this kid, right?
Yeah. And then moving past that, the comparison they're using here is when he killed Corpse Taker. Now, I understand that that's the most recent book, so that's why they're kind of referencing it as the most recent thing. In terms of the novel, it happened 6 months ago or whatever. I just don't know that I agree that this is his one and only time of just killing with, I don't know, premeditate. I don't know, just the cold-blooded killing sort of thing, that point that both Harry and the Merlin are trying to make here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess technically it was a human, but at the same time, like, if the black magic had warped it so much that it's not really, I don't know. I just, the wording that they use here is that I'd never just killed anyone before. I'd killed things in the heat of battle. I feel like that was the heat of battle, though. I feel like it was. You had a split-second decision.
I think it absolutely was the heat of battle.
Exactly, but Harry's trying to be like, this is the first time that I ever just, like, took out a gun and shot someone just because. And I'm like, I don't know that I agree with that. Like, you were... to me, the situation is the same as it's been in every book.
Yeah, and because like, even Merlin kind of explains it to him. Like, if you hadn't, you would have been dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, it was kind of intimate and coldly calculated, but it was coldly calculated in a split second. Like, I don't know. It was coldly calculated.
Yeah, exactly. Cold and calculated. You were presented facts that you had to process very, very quickly.
Very quickly. Wasn't time
to think about it necessarily, but you did do the right thing. You were not wrong.
Yeah.
And you had all the facts leading up to it. You did not make a random guess. You had very, very, very educated guess there, okay? I mean, yeah, sure, maybe it would have been the, I don't know, smarter, suaver thing to do to really make sure it's not Lucio in there. But again, none of it to me came across as the way things were going.
You didn't come up with another solution to get her to out herself.
This guy's a fucking killer. He had so many other options. I can't believe he just killed her. Like, no, that's not how it was presented.
I mean, I guess it wasn't that he just, I guess he did. He was like corpse taker. And when he saw the flinch, then he was like, all right, I'm gonna kill you. But like you say, that was more giving him his confirmation
if we'd been in a scene where, I don't know, Harry was being offered, like, okay, everything's calmed down, we're in negotiations, you walk away and I'll walk away, and then they turn their back on Harry, and then Harry lifted the gun and shot, that might have been a little bit like, holy fuck, dude, like, you're actually... But that's not how it played out at all.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
She was not running away. She was just gonna go take a second to turn around and then take her bearings on you guys as well. Maybe she was gonna
run away. Going back out to kill the rest of them.
Exactly. She was running off in Lucio's body, but that wasn't like she was retreating for the day or anything like that. She hadn't surrendered. She was still...
Yeah.
She stole Lucio's body specifically in hopes that you kill Lucio. That was her whole...
Well, she killed Lucio was basically what she thought she had done.
She stabbed her own body in that way, but... Yes. The point was as though that she was still a bad guy, okay? She was not somebody who'd surrendered.
No.
And the way that Harry is presenting this facts right now, it's like, still gives me nightmares at night about just how cold I was in that moment. I'm like, compared to the rest of the books leading up to this, like, okay, maybe
and
it
like
wasn't...
And like you say, some of the other
maybe
deaths
it wasn't human, but so was Victor Sells.
Right.
And... I mean, the werewolves, I guess, I don't know, flop back and forth on how much they were human or not, but I would still mostly call them human.
Well, but even, like, Grave Peril, even, like, Cravain was a human. He just demonized himself or whatever when he was, but again, he was a warlock or whatever to start with.
That's my point, though, I don't get Harry's rationality for this one thing, for him to be so hung up on this is, like...
Well,
everything I've done before now was really, you know, I could explain it away, but this last one was just so intense and just like...
I was going to say, this was almost more justified in all of them because this was
exactly.
Your captain that she specifically got and
exactly.
was going to make you guys all let her... Yeah,
I think this is intentional that he is Butcher's writing him to cherry pick what he wants so he can he's feeling.
As I said, it's the most recent book, so it's the most fresh on my mind and
I was going to say...
Back to the readers and...
She almost left it worse because, like I say, had he assumed that that was still Corpse Taker, he could very well have gone in and finished off Lucio, right? As Alicia dying in the alley, he could have taken her head off, right? Lucio's like, oh yeah, she's done for, but you know what I mean? Before Harry realized that was the switch, it was in that body, she could have made him responsible for actually killing Lucio instead of him ending up taking out Corpse Taker, which would have been, I think, 10 times worse than trying to, you know?
Yes, and that's just exactly why it kind of hurts when he goes through this justification with the Merlin of all people.
Yeah.
And
but, you know, then there's always that guy, too, who twists your words or makes you think or whatever, right? Where you want to argue with them and you know they're wrong, but you just can't think in the moment of how to do that, you know? And that's probably part of it, too, you know, with the Merlin being so perfectly poised and so reasonable and so, well, but didn't you just do this? But did you just do this? Why wasn't that? Right. And then, you kind of get all churned up inside your own head, too.
Well, that's why, right at the end of this chapter, they go back and forth a lot, and Harry seems to really be trying to have that last word on him, but the Merlin keeps being like, no, bitch, you have to uphold the laws. And he's like, oh, even if it's children, he's like, we have to follow the laws, okay? And I get it. The laws are quite broad as they are already. It's just the easiest thing to do is just to follow them to the letter that they are written. And that's it. That's all. Sorry, folks. Go home.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit surprised that, like, Merlin does sort of have that moment of softening towards him.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen too much too soon, buddy. Like,
That is a strange thing to see from
I was like, what?
Merlin of all people, exactly. But at the same time, yeah, give me my acknowledgement, bitch. I'm 30 years old. This shit sucks.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and I guess that's a thing too, right? Is the Merlin's not just black and white. We want to have this big hate on for the Merlin, and we have a lot of reasons to have a big hate on for the Merlin. But you know what? He's a person too, and he's trying to do a job, and he's how many more centuries older than, right? Like, again, you know, if Harry's starting to feel this way in 30 years, how does the Merlin feel after 300 years of seeing black magic and warlocks and sorcerers? And you know what I mean? Like, there's that too, right? Where, I mean, again, right, you know, you've got a much harder line on things as an adult than you do as, like, a kid, right? Because you're like, yeah, no, I know now. You've lied to me 100 fucking times. I'm not buying it anymore, you Weasley little fuck.
Experience and all that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
And then there is another moment at the end here, too, where, again, this whole time he's gone, oh, they never even told me the kid's name. And I'm like, and you never asked either.
Yeah, do you really want to? I'm feeling like you don't want. Yeah, that would
just be partially, too, but I also feel that Harry, again, he keeps taking this holier-than-thou attitude about, like, fuck you guys and fuck all this, and then he's all sad. He's like, oh, well, I guess I didn't give a soul case. I didn't give a trial. But it's like, yeah, you also never did ask what the kid's name was, and
yeah,
that whole names have power, names have meaning is just as prevalent in the Dresden Files. I will say, though, I do like, though, this end point here. Again, Harry just has to have the last word, but the whole Merlin...
it's his book.
The laws exist for a reason. They must stand as written. And then, right, I can see what they're written in.
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
Again, very powerful. It is, yeah.
It's a good line. It's a good line. Like you said, it's his book. It's a good line. I bet you he didn't think about it until he went home and was just dictating it to Bob, but it's a good line.
Ooh, you know what I should have said? Yeah.
Thank you to our Patreon subscribers for your generous support. It's people like you who help us do what we do. If you're not yet a Patreon subscriber, sign up today and get a fuck ton of bonus content, kick-ass merch, behind-the-scenes outtakes, and more. Sign up today at patreon.com/freeflowrambling. Chapter 2. Ebenezer attempts to placate Harry and make amends, while also updating him on the current war situation, but Harry brushes him off and heads home. So Harry leaving just kind of made me giggle a little bit that he's got, like, this outfit underneath.
I know, it's like red tame talking shorts.
All of them, even when Ebenezer undresses, I'm like, you guys are so lame.
They're so fancy.
But Ebenezer only ever has, like, coveralls and a t-shirt underneath. But yes, it's funny because, again, Harry being so tall and whatever, just the way he's like, you know, he's like, I'm not really built. I'm not really, like, just skinny little white chicken legs or something like that. And, like, miles of them coming out from under this horse. Plus, oh, wait, does he see his robe too or just the cloak?
I do have a hard time imagining him in a pair of shorts.
I do. I know, tall guys.
I can see him throwing a duster over top of all of it.
This is the way he rolls. He's like, whatever. I've worn, like, sparkly t-shirts and purple sweatpants. I can just throw a duster on over my shorts and flip-flops, too. I don't know.
Now I just have visions of him whooshing and these, like, white, light legs sticking out. Yeah.
Right?
I'm sorry,
just
Harry.
Like, oh, my goodness. Oh, I mean,
you deserve better.
Well, he already says he's like a magic nerd that just hides out in his basement. So, I mean, come on, really? Like, I don't care if it's like a sauna out there right now. He's not getting any sunlight.
It's been working out. He's probably not totally chicken-legged.
Not anymore, no. He's running more now. That's got to build up some muscle.
And on a beach.
That's right.
Very
pain
nice.
In the ass.
Well, did you go to the beach?
I did. It wasn't really a beach, though. It was, I should have gone farther, I guess.
Just as much as Stanley Park. Like, it's mostly bed of rocks and then
pavement,
water.
Yeah.
She did go by the Braith Mansion, though. Actually, are they on off Lakeshore?
Since they're, like, out of the city.
Yeah, but didn't Lakeshore eventually go up?
Yeah, eventually, but I didn't leave the city. He's redone his car a little bit. He's managed to actually get some good repairs on it.
After the fungus demons, he's actually, it's got working seatbelts again. And
so it is completely possible that in the graphic novel Warcry, where they have everything's been refinished inside of it, it is possible with this time frame that it actually did happen.
It actually did happen.
And that it wasn't a mistake in the graphic novel.
Maybe he
still says bucket seats, but, you know. Well, yes, he has.
Bucket seats aren't a thing. They don't actually mean buckets.
Okay, sure. I just thought from wooden crate to bucket seat.
Yes, yeah. I get where you came from, but bucket seats is actually a type. Yeah.
All right.
Sorry for that. They're not.
Sorry, okay. Point is that he's got his car fairly nice. This warden paycheck is
comparatively. It beats the no paycheck he had before.
That too. But yeah, see, it's nice to see the Beatles got a little bit of life back in it.
Yes.
It gets a little love now and then.
Barely.
I love too, he's already got all the windows, like, he just left everything, like, rolled down and unlocked.
It is still a, you know, car, but...
True. It's not likely anybody would be necessarily in a rush to steal it, but, you know. Yeah, he's like, I don't care. Windows down.
So, last book, the wardens found out that there must be a traitor because the vampires knew about their backup plans and their retreat and were able to break in and kill off a bunch of wardens when they had thought that they were safe and housed securely in hospitals. And
yes, safe house after safe house after safe house, they kept coming.
Kept getting compromised. And then we went through Warcry, and obviously there was some weird shifty shit there because apparently the council had sent them on a weird mission that they don't even know about. And then now we're fast forward to this where things are still not going well. And the wardens are still on the losing side against the Red Council. And as Harry said, we came out of the warehouse. Beggars can't be choosers. We are dealing with some young-ass kids right now.
He just wants to get the fuck out of here. He's like, I'm done with all of you. Just, like, walking away. Mm-hmm. And Ebony's just like, Harry. And Harry's just like, fuck you, old man. I am. Yeah, they got a couple of babies on the door. So he's like, yeah, still new recruits we're pulling in. And yeah, he finally pulls up. And he's like, what do you want? And he's like, the war's not going well. Really? You don't fucking say.
I don't think the stats that Harry gives, like that 45,000 people though so far have been killed. I had no idea it was that many.
Well, remember when they got to,
do I remember?
Sicily, but yeah, like they took out the entire, like, yeah, a couple of square blocks.
It's been a couple of weeks, Danson.
Yeah.
It's numbers, though. Numbers.
Like, it's an insane.
That's a hefty number.
It's way more people than were in the town I just recently moved from. That's like got like a couple thousand people tops. So like 45, that's, yeah.
So part of the problem they're having right now is that they've needed to rely on their allies even more, and the White Council's supposed to be the big players, and the fact that they need to fall on their little guy allies is a little bit dramatic for them, a little bit scary. And their two main allies, obviously the Venatori Umbrum, who we've met now twice in the last couple of short stories, or at least we met an ex of them in I Was a Teenage Bigfoot, and then we got to meet a bunch of them in Warcry. And again, just for a quick... They are meant to be academic swords, although a lot have military experience. Their true strength lay in utilizing human legal systems and analyzing information because they can use computers. Crazy how helpful
big
that is
right
in a war.
Then. Yeah.
And then the Fellowship of St. Giles are vampires who were bitten but did not take their first kill.
Half-turned.
And so they're still only half-turned. Yeah. So they have some of the vampire properties, but not all
Go,
of them.
Susan.
And that is... They're too...
Thankfully enough to make them really badass.
And just enough to make them badass, but also just everything the council has to rely on right now, which is not fantastic.
Yeah, a bunch of half-vampires you hope are willing to work with you.
Yeah, and then some academic
types. Don't drink the Kool-Aid!
Right?
Well, that's another thing, too, is that at any moment they could just succumb, and then you've lost another one. And
yeah.
Potentially yourself.
Yeah, whether by choice or not, because, I mean, I got to admit, you know, you suddenly can do all this badass... superpowered stuff, you might want to just give in and go whole hog after a while.
So turns out the two groups have been pretty successful in hitting the Red Court. And coming from sort of a more human side of things and more covert hitting supply chain stuff and disrupting the human assistance that they rely on during the day.
Army marches on its stomach. So yeah, things like that actually prove surprisingly effective. It doesn't all have to be about guns and tanks.
Or columns of fire and wind.
This is like Sodom and Gomorrah or something like that, yeah. And they've got a boot camp. So not only are they trying to bring in all these young guys, but they're actually putting them through, like, wizard boot camp to get up to speed as soon as possible.
Which is honestly a good call. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know. It makes you kind of wonder what was... boot camp? What was training before that, you know, kind
of? It was just one-on-one apprenticeship, right?
You think it was just exactly the same kind of whatever and then just...
I think it was one-on-one apprenticeship. And the thing is that I think between this academic type versus the warden type wizard kind of depends on who your mentor is.
Which
if your mentor is a warden, you're probably learning a lot more battle spells. And if your mentor is, you know, a stuffy, stuck in the tower doing potions all day, that's probably more what you learn. I don't know. And maybe right now they've got a lot of overlap happening, but I think, you know, there was a little bit of that. Okay, who do you fit with best? Morgan was obviously an apprentice of Lucio, and it's, you know,
yeah, clearly but, I was going to say, because, I mean, when you look at Harry and his type, right, and he's like, I'm not good at, so... Yes, obviously your apprentice can, or your mentor or whatever can teach you a certain amount. But like I say, I don't think that you're necessarily learning just what, right? Like,
well, I get that you have your own sort of magic that you just automatically are better at and built for.
Yeah, right? I mean, Ebenezer could have like super finesse, dainty magic. And Harry's like, it's just not going to be right.
Well, I get that. But I also think that, you know, the wizards aren't doing a fucking lottery for apprentices, okay? You kind of have to be lucky to get one willing to teach you the ropes.
There's a certain amount of that, too. And I would feel once you're maybe in the council and around that you could maybe switch a little bit, you know, learn some. But I just feel like, for the wardens, though, like, I do get what you're saying. And, yeah, sort of what we've seen so far, that's kind of how you get who you get and you don't get upset. But I feel like warden-wise, there would be, like, extra... train, like, I feel like to fight and
to say that battle spells once you are,
yeah,
you know, they give you a sword and a cloak and they say, all right, buddy boy,
that there's still got to be like a police academy thing that they go through at that point, right? It's just again, those that maybe have an interest
still, most
in it or
these,
more aptitude for it.
Most of these warden missions pre-war, well, I mean, the numbers were on their side. There was a little bit more time to learn, okay? It'd be like 20 wardens show up to this one thing, and it'd be like, all right.
The difference is now is that, it used to be like, you know, like the Canadian Army where it's just, if you want to join, you can't. Now it's like those countries where it's like, you have to serve a minimum of like 2 years. So once you turn 18,
pretty much.
Like, it's like, you have to do your time now. Nobody gets to skip by. This is no longer... And probably like some pretty intense.
Yeah, I do like this moment though.
Starship Troopers.
Don't see what else I can do to help unless you're wanting someone to go start fathering new wizards. No, Harry, nobody wants that from you.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there's a few people that wouldn't mind. Lara certainly wouldn't mind, I'm sure. Yeah, that's just, Harry.
So now we get a little bit of an update. When Harry was first having a conversation with the wardens at McAnally's, there was this moment of, they followed us into the Never Never, where we had a pact and an alliance and permission, and they didn't. And so we thought we were safe, but they didn't care. And they followed us through. And Harry was like, holy shit, like, that's fucking ballsy. Like, the fairies are going to
draw the wrath of the...
They're going to be pissed as fuck, and they're going to have all these problems. Here we are 6 months later, so the fairies haven't done shit.
We've declared war, but we're not really going to actually do anything. Well, and only one of them.
Summer declared war, but Summer doesn't have the forces. Summer's really, you know, they're like...
Summer's the peacekeeping.
They're taking defense, but they're like...
I want to throw some flowers at you.
Hey, Winter! We thought Winter was going to come and smash the shit out of them, and they haven't, and nobody knows what's up. So everyone's fucking weirded out as fuck. Mab loves war. She loves killing.
She lives for it. She's the queen of...
Where the hell is she, and what is she doing that she's got better things to do than come and
squash
She's the Ares of the fairies?
Nicely done. Nicely done.
I'm sorry, I feel proud of myself.
Hey, wait, Jess, which are you? Oh, yeah.
So this is very surprising to everyone, because what the fuck? We thought for sure that was going to be great for us.
Our one saving grace was that, at least now the fairies are going to come stomp on you, too.
And it's very surprising to everyone that it isn't. So Ebenezer's like, so listen, it would be super great if you could go figure out why.
You like messing around and solving fairy problems.
You have contacts there. Does he?
You have an itch.
That's the thing that's weirdest to me. You have contacts there. Not really. He has contacts with the summer court because he, like, put the lady and the knight in, but...
Does he know about his stepmother?
Oh, maybe, not, Leah. Maybe. Sorry. Yes,
fairy
Leah, the godmother.
Godmother. Okay, I was going to say,
like, does he know about the
and
godmother?
Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But outside of Leah, I would be like, I feel like you have more contacts in the summer.
I mean, I don't know.
He just found out one short story ago that Winter's still mad at you.
Mab did personally come hire him. I mean, what more of a contact do you want than Queen Mab yourself?
I don't think that's what Ebenezer's asking him to do or wants him to do. But I also don't think he would even know about that. So that's my question about, what do you mean contact? facts. He's killed Jenny Greenteeth like 2 days ago.
Right. Doesn't he have good contacts? He's got toot toots and stuff like that. So, I think it is
but fair. But toot toot is undecided, not winter.
I understand that. But my point was I could understand Ebenezer feeling like you have been.
I know that you're living with another guy and you know the fairies. But even the fairies that come to clean his apartment are summer.
Yes, but yeah, I being the Harry as a wizarding private eye kind of thing, it's not unreasonable for Ebenezer to think he's probably got some other, maybe not right, like you say, maybe not, the Illinois sheet. Oh yeah, perfect, you're right in there. But okay, so you got two, you know these guys, and two these guys, you know that guy, Chauncey and all the rest, right? I'm like, it's not necessarily completely unreasonable that, or Ebenezer just has a lot more faith in him than he should, or that, and is like, you must know people. You went and solved a war for them. Obviously, you've got to know people if you did that, right?
You're going to make one friend while you did that?
No, not one. In fact, I pissed off more. In fact, exactly. I pissed off my allies. I was working for the Winter Court, and they still just tried to take out my guys. Yeah. Funny how that works.
Weirdly enough. Let me just call up Slate. He'd love to see me.
We also find out from McCoy that it's not the full senior counselor that's requesting this because he doesn't trust them.
That's even more.
They're a bunch of jackets.
It's just Ebenezer and a couple of friends. And we have a little bit of an inkling from a couple of books back when, I don't even know what book that was now, when they came to talk and he had to have that conversation with Injun Joe. And
at Summer Night, that was when they
was
when they had the main council meeting.
Yes, okay.
Summer Night, yeah.
So Summer Night. So we already know sort of who Ebenezer's friends on the council already are.
Martha Liberty and Jinjo.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly right.
He's backup.
So, okay, we can assume that he trusts those guys. And then everyone else on the council that we know, the Merlin. Okay.
He's an asshole,
but hopefully we could trust the Merlin of all people. He's leading this war.
Yeah, we can always trust the leaders in charge of our... completely and fully.
And then we've got Ancient Mai, who obviously is not a big fan of Harry's.
Yeah, she was willing to, let him see if he can bail his own ass out of this. And if not, oops, oh well.
We've got the gatekeeper, and we could hope that the gatekeeper is on Ebenezer's side, how he just also sent a letter that he's willing to deliver to Harry.
Yeah, and we saw, based on the gatekeeper's conversation with Harry at the council meeting, and his rescuing his ass out of a tree. Right, so we know that whether he's specifically on Ebenezer's side, we know that the gatekeeper is kind of on Harry's side. Therefore, it stands to reason that, he's kind of in the same fold as Ebenezer in that.
So that's everyone then?
No. It's that...
Lafortier?
Lafortier.
Yes, Lafortier.
Yeah, he's the other one that's on there now. And he did not have... He was not thrown in support of Harry in book four.
Does not like him.
So, so Merlin,
Mai,
and...
But still, that only leaves Lafortier and... Merlin.
Ancient Mai and...
Ancient Mai. So it's just those three that we don't trust right now is like, I don't know.
But still, that is, three-sevenths of the senior council. So like I say, when you only have... So you've got Gatekeeper, who's kind of neutral.
Nobody really knows his position.
He's not 100%. We know he leans toward, but which was the problem we had in Summer Night, right? We had 3-4-3 against, and the Gatekeeper was like... let's see. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And that's kind of, where they're still at, right? Which is fair when you've got possibly half, maybe just over half, that you can't 100% vouch for. It is kind of nerve-wracking. It's how do you know where this is all going to go down?
So we get this letter from Rashid, or the gatekeeper, and he's basically saying, hey, I know that there's black magic in Chicago. It's your shit to deal with. Go deal with it. And it's like,
oh, and nobody knows.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if you know this, gatekeeper, but I just agreed to look into the Winter Court. And now
Reggie doesn't
also
know that. You just sent me a letter. I haven't had a chance to tell you.
You also want me to go do some black magic shit? Like, I was kind of going to go get my nails done this weekend, if that's okay with you.
I was really hoping to hit up a tanning bed. Look like such
so
a dork
tired.
In my shorts. Yes. Well, we know with Harry, it never rains, but it pours.
And so
you have one thing, let's make it 10.
And then on top of all that, we find out that, why did this execution happen in Chicago of all places? This is a crossroads, which I'm not sure that this has necessarily been actually said before now in the books. The ley lines on the crossroads that is Chicago.
Yeah,
it
that's
is,
been mentioned a bit.
It has been? Okay. Yeah. So,
because they talk about some of that with Nicodemus and stuff in book five,
that,
I feel
but
like.
It's
fair enough. Okay.
An airport thoroughfare.
It's a major port for trains, cars, planes, among
planes,
the mortals.
Trains, and automobiles.
And then it just so happens that also a bunch of magical ley lines also happen to pass through here. And also, we wanted
getting
you...
getting the shit kicked out of them there.
We also wanted you to come and witness an execution, Harry, because we want you to remember your place in this world. And we don't like you. And we wanted to execute you. Just, you know,
heads
up.
Wanted to give you a little bit of a trauma response. And it worked.
But that is a little bit, like, are you allowed to just call anyone, any warden to come witness? Why did Harry have to come anyways? Couldn't he have just been like, I'm busy. Why do I have to come to your execution? Or is it like, everyone in the area must attend and be a witness, or he didn't know it was going to happen, or he did know and he felt it was his duty to go, or...
All of the above. I mean, yeah, there's any number of reasons. Like, I could very well see it being, like, a mandatory thing to, I mean, for the very least...
As long as we're in your neighborhood, you have to attend all...
Well, and security and whatever, right? We have a very, very dangerous individual. Let's make sure we have a lot of other very dangerous individuals to make sure he doesn't get away. And, you know,
is a fair point, I suppose. That one.
Like, right, yeah, all hands on deck, please.
Who's the strongest of our wardens right now?
If only we had, like, a big brawler and I could just slug around magic. Like, yeah. Yeah, so many.
At least Harry's still perceptive enough to sort of see through the politicking and be like, oh, yeah, well, no, he's just trying to send a message.
It's kind of funny, too, because Ebenezer does also point out in this that, again, being vulnerable against all the vamps and everything like that, and he's like, it does seem to be bad for their health. I'm showing up in Chicago, so it's also a little bit just for our own safety and, you know, that we're like, yeah, let's go there.
So presumably, if no one else knows about the black magic and it's just between Harry and the gatekeeper, it's a little bit like, oh my gosh, why so secretive? But it's also a blessing because Harry can do and solve however he wants to without people looking over his shoulder and being like, oh, you're getting close to black magic again.
He's under the purview of the White Council for this.
I give you permission to do what you need to do.
Yes.
It's also
Thank
a setup.
You.
Don't trust him, Harry.
Right.
We also get a little bit of a reminder about the influences that Harry is already under with the coin, because Ebenezer's like, you look different.
It's been a minute.
I'm fine. Yeah. It's my hand. Yeah.
It actually has been long enough to almost forget about the Fallen now, because it was almost entirely irrelevant in Deadbeat. Outside of Butter's medical prognosis.
I think they only just mentioned sort of...
Exactly. When we did the little bit of healing with Butters at the beginning of the book, and then when he had to start winning guitar at the end.
Because of the manipulation she does.
But. Well, true. And, like, making her remember all the pages and, like, you started
to remember. It's been a while
for us since we don't kind of find out. We just get hints of it. We don't really discover what it is until, like, the end of Deadbeat kind of a thing. Yeah.
But point is that it's a little bit of this, like, heart-stopping, like, oh. And I do, like... I mean, obviously, no getting into spoilers, but this is obviously the perfect time for Lash to make her big comeback and be important again to Harry's life.
Remember me?
Yeah. It's weird. It's almost like there's an author pulling the strings, but this is the perfect timing for all of this to happen.
I think this is a really nice... These first couple of chapters are a really good way of reviewing without recapitulating.
Yes, without just spewing exposition at you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. A slightly more organic way. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. He refers, he's been having me play guitar to like exercise my hand and get more function back and all that kind of stuff. And
beautifully layered too.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. But you get reminded.
Conflict and gray areas. Yum.
But then we
get back to
all like, mushy, where, you know, my mentor, father figure guy is looking at, wait a minute.
And I'm still scared.
Wait a minute.
Actually, that was one of the things, because like in the very first chapter, he mentions my former mentor. My one-time mentor. I was
yeah.
like, that sounds like...
Which could be read either way.
Like
he's
you
not,
just don't need it.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not apprentice.
Or you're still bloody mad at him, and you're like, no apprentice of mine, or like, no mentor of mine.
Exactly. Is it just because, yes, I am no longer an apprentice, so he's my one time, or like, yeah, he's, I don't know, man, he's
And I wasn't sure
until
I got to this part here, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, he's mad.
He's still a little bit mad about it, yeah.
He's pissed.
Yeah. He's trying to offer him an olive branch, though, and he's just not ready to take it. Still hurts too much.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah. Death threats in the guise of formal decapitation sort of ruined my appetite. Yeah, let's go for lunch. You know what? Being reminded that, remember when this was you, dude? Yeah, remember it still could be again? Yeah. Yeah. So he's going to putt away, as he often does. The mighty power of the
beetle.
Like
you said, it's a really good summary of just everything that's happened in the last few books. Okay, we're still mad at Ebenezer. We still have to deal with the fallen coin. I'm still on the hook for black magic, kind of, but I've become a warden now, and this is my new life. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. And oh, wait, here's the new stuff stirring up. Yeah, mm-hmm. Don't forget about the war. Yeah. So, yeah, investigate fairies, investigate shit going on in town. Oh, well, see, yeah, there you go, right? Even he says it never rains, it pours.
This concludes our episode 17.1, Conflicted Convictions. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and macanallies.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the magic alive and help Tanzan buy a new computer so we can continue to record. We are Free Flow Rambling, conjured by it at your own risk.